So I haven't thought of anything funny to say for the bit before the theme music. So what I thought I could do is let you come up with something. So I'm going to leave a gap now and you say your funny bit. So off you go. That was really funny. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the sharp range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. It's so great to have you here. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, you gorgeous, gorgeous creature. I love you. I love you. But there's no time for that right now because we've got to do the interactive bit. Are you ready for the interactive bit? Here it comes. How have you been? Good. Okay, that was the interactive bit. So, I've got a packed show. I can't mess around. I'm going to get straight into it. Right now. With this. This bit now. It's coming right now. Where is it? It said it would be here. It's the first segment said he was going to be here right now. Oh, no, hang on. It's just coming. Hold on, wait a minute. Come on. No, I've been waiting. Blimey, get. Right, you ready? Okay, right. Here we go. I haven't got a jingle for this bit, but what I have got for you is a wonderful story that was sent in from Susan Brasher Tisha. Now, I've actually got two lovely stories today, and I'm really excited about sharing them with you because this is my favourite bit of the show, is the input from you guys, not just because I have to do less research, but also because I just love hearing the stories because everyone's got a great Christmas story and everyone should share them with me so I can share them with you. Anyway, this is Susan Brasher Tisha's. I hope I'm saying that right, Susan. This is her story. Here it comes. I grew up not having a real house. See, we were carny folk, and we finally rented a home when I was 6. We'd never done Christmas before. So my brother, who was 8 years old, he told me about how Christmas worked. See, Santa comes in on a sleigh, and it was pulled by 8 reindeer, and the lead reindeer had a red nose, and they'd fly across the skies, and you could hear bells. Well, he told me, this guy leaves you a gift under the tree. I was really excited, but quickly I got quite sad because we had no decorations or a tree. And that's what I said to my brother. But he said this was my first year and Santa would overlook this. And I had the best brother ever. I heard a bell sound and I swear I saw a red light and we ran outside and I thought I saw the sleigh go across the skies. We went back into the house and on the table was a gift wrapped in the comic strip paper. And I thought, how could this be? That was my best memory ever of Christmas. I don't remember the gift, but I'll never forget how I felt. That's my Christmas story. That's wonderful. That really is a wonderful story. Thank you so much for sending that through, Susan. And I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did. Now let's do this.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
A popular trend that we've seen in the States in the last few years are pop-up Christmas bars. These are existing bars or vacant spaces that are temporarily transformed into elaborate Yuletide spectacles with themed playlists, crazy decor, and fancy cocktails. Now, it may seem like all of our festive activities in the U.S. revolve around alcohol, but these places are so over the top with their extensive decorations that many gawkers turn out just to enjoy that Christmas cheer and they skip the drinking altogether. I mean, these places are really quite amazing. The concepts will range from a bar that is transformed to look like a family room on Christmas Day. It'll have a Christmas tree, presents, lots of couches, and multicolored lights. Or you may have Santa's castle at the North Pole, complete with igloos and s'mores. Or maybe it's a ski lodge vibe, featuring a bar built to look like a log cabin, picnic tables, and a mural with a ski lift. Also, Instagram and selfies will play a huge part of the appeal, as these locations will feature selfie stations, such as a giant velvet Santa throne where people can sit and take their photos. Each major city across the country now boasts dozens of these holiday bars, all serving up specialty cocktails in keepsake holiday mugs. Or, from the land of Thomas the Tank Engine, comes the opportunity to make memories by riding on an actual steam engine through the English countryside. These journeys offer a warm and magical holiday experience. Like the Polar Express, these are not your typical locomotives. They are Christmas trains full of festive spirit. They carry guests like Father Christmas and his elves, who have gifts and goodies for the passengers. Most riders will board from a platform decked out with Christmas trees and return to a train station sporting either a brass band or carolers. On the trip, riders may find themselves traveling through picturesque areas like the snowy moors of North Yorkshire, the Lancashire forests, or along the South Devon coastline. The trains feature sparkling and tinsel-clad carriages for those daytime trips, or they are lit up with thousands of Christmas lights for after-dark travels. Most of the engines will also serve up tasty holiday treats along the way, like mince pie, chocolate, or roasted chestnuts, and they offer hearty adult beverages as well. Another Down Under suggestion from Aussie listener Katie Gibson is a visit to the Enchanted Garden in Brisbane. This is a dazzling evening walk through a series of shimmering gardens lit with twinkling lights wrapped in lush greenery and towering trees. The Enchanted Garden is a cutting-edge immersive experience filled with colorful lighting, audio, holograms, special effects, and sculptures. However, this is not the only magical setting that combines nature and technology. You can find similar botanical backdrops all over the continent with a magical feast of flowers and festivities. So nestled in the foothills of the Broken Back Ranges is the magnificent Hunter Valley Gardens. These impressive displays feature 3 million Christmas lights, creating sensational sights and colors. Or visit the Maroochy Bushland Botanical Gardens in Tanawa for its festive garden wonderland. You can find the magic of Christmas at the Wanneroo Botanical Gardens, or take a walk through Adventure Park in Wallington and see its massive display of 2.7 million lights around a 16-acre lake. All of these provide an outdoor journey through Australia's favorite landscapes, combined with live plants and trees and a stunning light show. Well, the party's on, and the spirit's here. Where will you go to get good cheer? Let us know.
You know, there's a steam train not far from me, actually, that does that whole Polar Express type thing. I've never been on it. I know a mate of mine did. It sounds like it was all right. So, yeah, thanks to everyone that sent in any suggestions there to Bob. And thank you, Bob, for doing a fantastic job again. If you've got any traditions you want to share with us, send them in and Bob will talk about them in an upcoming episode. In the meantime, let's do this.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Now this segment comes from a question that Bob sent me and he said, I have a question. Have you ever had roasted chestnuts? I keep seeing them offered at most of the UK holiday events I'm researching, and I keep thinking how I've never had them. I've been singing about them my whole life, but never tasted one. Are they any good? Well, here's the thing. To answer Bob's question, I have had roasted chestnuts. I, being a gardener, one of my customers has a chestnut tree. And like one year I collected a load of them, brought them home. It was like a bumper crop that year, and I just had loads of them. And I brought them home, and we cooked a load up, and my wife didn't like them at all, and I didn't mind them. They were okay. I actually cooked them with like other roasted vegetables, and my wife ended up picking those ones out and giving them to me. I liked them, you know, they were okay. But I've never actually bought them from a street vendor. And to be honest, I only actually ever remember seeing them one time. I think I'd gone to London, and I remember seeing like this guy had a big pan that he was cooking them on, and he was shoveling through them with a small shovel, I suppose, and then bagging them up and selling them. Don't know how much they were. I remember looking at them and thinking, do you know what, I wouldn't mind trying those, but I never did. I was very young at the time, probably 10, something like that. That was like, what, 30-odd years ago? And I've, since then, I've only had them once when I cooked them myself. And I've never seen them for sale. Or at least I don't remember having seen them for sale. I think as an adult, if I had seen them for sale, I probably would have bought some. Anyway, this segment is about chestnuts. So, there were four different types of chestnut tree. And they're spread all around the globe. There's like an Asian type. There's ones you find in Europe. And there's ones you find in America. And now in Europe, they became like a real staple crop because Alexander the Great realized that you could use the nuts for all sorts of things. You could like boil them, you could mash them, you could put them in soups and puree them, you could roast them, of course, or you could dry them out and grind them down to make a flour and make bread and other things from them with that flour. And in Italy, the chestnut is known as, I'm going to say this wrong, l'albero del pan, which means the bread tree. And Alexander the Great planted them throughout Europe, like in mountainous areas where you couldn't grow grain. So they became a staple crop. And chestnuts are actually really healthy. They've got twice as much starch in them than a potato, but they're lower in fat than most types of nut. And they're high in fibre, and they're also high in vitamin C as well. So they're like really nutritious. So the question, why do we roast them? Well, I don't know if you've ever had a chestnut. I've eaten a lot of raw ones, not eaten many roasted ones. When you get them originally, and you break open the shell, obviously you've got to get through the spiny bit first, which is a pain. We used to go collecting them when I was a kid with my family, and my dad would always show me what you do is you roll it with your foot on the ground, and that sort of breaks them open, so you don't have to use your hands, because those spines really are like really spiky. Then you get the nut, crack it open, and inside, the nut itself is really sweet, and it's got like a carroty kind of taste to it, but it's covered in a very thin, bitter skin. And from the nature of these nuts, they're really hard to peel the skin off. It's a real pain in the backside. But if you roast them, that skin comes off so much easier, and it makes it that much easier to get to the nut. So I guess that's the main reason why they're sold roasted. Now, the American chestnut tree is quite a sad story, actually. So they used to cover 200 million acres, and there were 4 billion trees. Apparently, it was the most common tree in the whole of the States. Now, the nuts on the American chestnut tree, they're a lot smaller. They're like, it's about the size of an acorn. And apparently, they've got like a carroty kind of taste when they're raw. But when they're cooked up, they become really, really sweet and nuttier. And in Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, back in the 18th and 19th century, trains carried tons of them to be sold by street vendors. And most cities and towns around the United States had people selling them on nearly every street corner because they were so abundant and they were so cheap to get hold of. And they'd stand there roasting their chestnuts, bagging them up and selling them off very cheaply back then because they were so abundant. But sadly, in 1904, a gardener noticed a blight on a chestnut tree in New York Zoological Park, and that blight had come over on a Japanese chestnut tree. Now, Asian chestnut trees, they get this blight, but they're sort of immune to it, so they carry it, but it won't destroy the tree. Whereas the American chestnut trees, sadly, had no immunity to it, and it wiped out, are you ready, of the 4 billion trees that used to be in the United States, it wiped out 3.5 billion of them, which does suggest there's still like half a billion trees out there. But this is why all of a sudden the chestnuts became so much more scarce. And the song was written in 1945, so at this point people's memories of chestnuts would still be vivid and in their memories, but sadly by that time they had all started to die out and there were so many less there. Now in the States you can still buy them from street vendors, usually only at Christmas time and mainly in like big cities like New York, say, but they're so much more expensive. And also the street vendors, if you ask them, turns out that most people buying them are just tourists thinking that they're a staple street food, when really, sadly, not so much these days. Now, there is some good news about the American chestnut tree, and I could go on about it, but they've been trying to cultivate trees that will be immune to the blight, and they are trying to reintroduce them into the parks and into the Appalachians and that. So, you know, fingers crossed, in years to come, the chestnuts will be as popular as they used to be. But at the moment, most of the chestnuts in the States are imported from overseas. So that's the story of chestnuts, roasting on an open fire. And do you know what? It's inspired me. If my customer has a bumper crop of chestnuts this year, I'm going to collect a load. I'll store them up, and come Christmas, I'm going to roast them and eat them. Now it's time for this. Here it comes. It's pant wetting time. I know you're excited, because I'm excited too. This is your joke. A man and his wife were walking along, and the man said, "What would you like for Christmas, dear?" Just as he asked this, a little sports car went past, and as she watched it, she said, maybe a little something to run around in would be nice. He bought her a tracksuit. There's your joke. That was it. Should we carry on, or should we give up? We've come too far to give up. Let's carry on. Boys and girls, I have an interview now with a lovely lady who got in touch with me. She got in touch with me because she says she enjoys the show. But when we were chatting through email, she was telling me about these lovely baubles she makes. And I said, well, why not come on the show and talk to everyone about it? And that's what she did. So now I've got an interview with the lovely Paula Horwood. I just want to say, this is a Zoom interview, so the audio quality might be not up to my usual low standard, but, you know, it's still okay, it just sounds a little bit different. So here's the interview, hope you enjoy it. Boys and girls, I've got a treat for you now. I've got an interview with a lovely lady by the name of Paula Horwood, and she makes very special Christmas decorations. So, Paula, tell us about your decorations.
So, my baubles, they're silver baubles, hang on the tree. When you look closely at them, they open up as ring boxes. So they've got a kind of plush purple interior. They're very silver, shiny metal on the outside. And it's got basically the intention of putting an item of jewellery, maybe an engagement ring. That was my first intention inside. So you can surprise someone Christmas morning and pop the question and completely take the unawares. And I kind of started the idea because I work for a very big company. I'm a small cog in a big business, and I wasn't getting that sense of fulfillment that a lot of people get when they run their own business or they're really into what they do. So that's something that was in the back of my mind. And my husband kind of encouraged me to just do a little side hobby or business that might give me that sense of achievement. And he suggested maybe I do something Christmas related, because like you and your correspondents and listeners, I do talk about Christmas all year long.
You do? You've always been a fan of Christmas?
Always, yeah.
You listen to Christmas music, like, throughout the year?
I do, but I do try to save certain songs for that early part of December, so when it kicks in, you get that little festive feeling.
This is the problem. Doing a Christmas podcast, you can sort of, I don't want to say overdose on it, but it's like, I worry that come December I don't get the feels anymore. But what's interesting is occasionally in the year I'll get like a real Christmassy buzz when I'm studying, like researching something and that, and it's nice. So I still get that little buzz throughout the year, you know.
Definitely,
anyway, sorry, yeah. I interrupted you then. Carry on.
No, I agree. I think August onwards is when I start thinking, oh, I'm quite looking forward to the colder weather now and start thinking about Christmas.
Mm.
But then that's when my orders start to come in from August onwards. So I get a little surge from then building up to Christmas. And then about midway through December, it tails off a bit.
When did you start up then?
It was about 2017.
So you've been going 5 years. Is that right?
Yeah.
This will be your fifth Christmas.
Yeah. But then I get the pause in the middle. So it doesn't feel like 5 years.
It's no, I guess everything stops for a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So at the moment it's the silver balls. Are they actually made of metal, or they just look like they're chrome?
Yeah, they are. So I think I was saying to you before that when I came up with the idea, I was searching online to see if I could source the stock somewhere and then just sell it as part of a little Christmas shop. But it was really surprising that it's not a product that's out there, not the traditional round shape anyway. So I thought perhaps it's something I can get made myself. And then I just went down a rabbit hole of trying to find out how to get a product manufactured. And I found out you need to get a basic sketch, which then you need a clever computer person to make like a CAD file, which is a three-dimensional image with the exact dimensions. Then you go on to the prototype phase, which I did go on to. And then I thought, you know what, I've got to just see this through now. So I ended up finding a manufacturer, getting a big batch ordered, filling up my parents' garage.
How many was your first order?
My first order was 750.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's a lot. I'm still working through them, but I'm getting there. And I think once I sell that first batch, then I'll be able to branch out a bit into other colour options. Because at the moment, it is just silver with the purple inside.
They look fantastic, though. They really do.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
no, yeah, they're pretty solid. You need a good, strong branch to hang them on, that's for sure. I do have to warn people about that.
I wondered that, because I wondered if they were just like a plastic bauble, but they're actually metal, and they're quite heavy. Yeah. That's the deal.
Yeah, I wanted to get them made of metal, because it meant that people could engrave if they wanted to.
Ah.
But then saying that, when I've tried to get them engraved before, a lot of engravers will turn their nose up and say, we don't deal with spherical surfaces.
So, oh, I see.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing, though. What's great about it is, like, it's a really good keepsake. It looks like a bauble. It looks Christmassy. Mm. But you wouldn't have to have it as a bauble. And it's something you could keep all year round on your dressing table, opened, you know, with whatever in it. I guess if an engagement ring, you'd keep it on your finger. But, you know, it's a really incredible idea. And like I said, I can't believe no one else had come up with it beforehand.
No, it's very niche. It's very niche. It was, it's a strange concept, because I think with Christmas decorations, everyone's got their favourite decoration that they bring out every year and think, oh, I like that one. And I'm hoping that it's something that people will bring out every year and be able to talk about.
Well, I don't think you just have to have it as a Christmas thing, because of the way it looks. Boys and girls, you'll have to check this out. You do have to look. I will put pictures on the Facebook page, and I'll put the links in the show notes as well. But you've got to see what they like. It's incredible. It's literally just like a metal sphere that opens up into being a ring box. And I think it's timeless. I don't think it is necessarily just a Christmas thing, but ideal to have at Christmas, you know. And I guess if you are going to use it every year on your tree, it'd be one of those ornaments that you'd really cherish, you know, when that comes out of the box. Because we've got loads of special ornaments, and I forgot about that one. I guess when you bring that one out, it's just bring back all those wonderful memories of the proposal, or the gift that was in it, you know, if it wasn't an engagement ring.
Yeah, and yeah, it's a nice feeling on Christmas Eve as well, because I think of all the orders that have gone out and what those people are going to do with them, how they're feeling at that time.
Oh, yeah. Have you got much feedback on that sort of thing at all? Any?
Yeah, well, when I first started, I got so few orders that the ones I did get, I was a little bit stalkerish, and I used to try and find them on social media. And I did find a few good pictures, but now I'm glad to say that there's enough traffic that I can't really do that anymore.
Yeah.
And I sell through a bigger company now as well called Prezibox. I don't know if you've come across them before, but they do really cool, quirky gifts, and they do all the fulfillment for me. Because the first year that I was with them, they said, look, we'd love to stock them, but the way everyone's going, you've got to be able to have a personalised option as well. And because, as I mentioned, engraving's a bit of a no-no at the moment, I had to work out a way to do it. So I kind of used a vinyl application. It's kind of a program you can hook up to your computer and cut out the vinyl and apply it to the bauble, and it does look really good.
Well, like a decal.
Yeah, but it's fiddly and it's time consuming, and that first year it did just take over my Christmas, because normally the evening I'd be watching a Christmas film, having a sherry, but every night I was just on the floor in our back room with all my tools and packaging around me, and it was great to get the orders, but it was also quite intense.
So what do you do now for that then?
So for the next year, my daughter was due, which was the lockdown 2020 year. And I said to the sales rep at Prezibox, I said, look, I can do the plain version fine, but I'm going to have to knock the personalised stuff on the head. And she said, oh, no, don't worry. We've tested the market now and the sales are really good. So just send us the batch and we'll take care of all that. So
oh, that's good.
Pressure's off. Yeah.
So did you send them all your stock, and now they do it all, do they?
I send it in batches. I think they try and predict how much they're going to sell. So
okay.
I might sell them like maybe 100. And if they sell all of those, then I'll send them a bit more. It's a good process. It works for me now.
So you sell from Bauble dot what?
.co.uk.
And through Prezibox as well?
Prezibox? Yeah, Prezibox and my Etsy page as well.
Oh, Etsy, of course, yeah. So in your email, when we were originally talking, you had another idea. Just share with everyone the idea about the pimp in your shed.
Oh, I have many ideas, but that was one that I remember that was maybe a kit that you could get to make your shed look like a gingerbread house.
That's a great
another
idea.
Thing. I can't source
I think
that anywhere.
It's a fantastic idea.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Well, I don't know how many people would do it. But I just, I like the idea of it. My shed is a funny shape, so I don't know if it would work on mine. So was it what, just cardboard paneling? Is that what it would have been?
Yeah, I think so. You could put a bit of, I don't know. I haven't really thought through this one as much as I did my ring boxes, but perhaps when I get more time on my hands, I'll pursue that further because I think it could work. Get a few candy cane poles, maybe some snowy felt on the top. I don't know.
So you, oh, I see. So this was just an idea, wasn't it? You didn't actually go all
no,
the way
down. I didn't pursue that
there
one.
There was no prototype or anything like that.
No, it's a bit like my idea for a microwave that doubles up as a TV. It's never been pursued.
Could that be?
I think they would have done it already. Do you think?
You could probably get a flat screen that you could just stick on your microwave.
Yeah.
This isn't Christmassy. Why are we even talking about this? So the plans for the future, is it just different colours or have you thought about maybe different designs and stuff like that? What were you thinking?
So far, I think because it's something that peaks every Christmas and then slows down, it's a very slow burning sales kind of thing. So I think first I'll branch out into different colours, but I'm not sure where else I could go with the bauble ring box idea. The other design flaw initially was because it's round, it doesn't really stay up on a flat surface. So they weighted the bottom a bit. Do you remember Weebles that wobble, but they don't fall down?
Yeah, Weebles wobble, but they never fall down. Yeah,
exactly. As do baubles, orbicles. They stay upright when they're closed.
Before we wrap up then, could you just, again, tell us where people can get hold of them and tell us again what it is.
Okay. So if you're planning to give someone a nice gift of jewellery this Christmas, I would really recommend buying a baubicle from my website, baubicles.co.uk.
So I've got to interrupt you. Me and my wife discussed this. Is it baubicle because it's like bauble and icicle, or is it baubicle because it's bauble and testicle?
It's kind of a bit of both. I thought baubicle just sounded funny and will stick in your head. But
is that right? You wanted the humour aspect of it. So people
a little bit. My friend had a husband called Russ. Well, she still has a husband called Russ. And we always used to call him Rusticles. And we just thought it was hilarious. So I kind of applied it to that. But also because it's a bauble and a receptacle.
A receptacle. I didn't think of that. There we go.
It does work on a few different levels.
So many levels.
And it's a domain name that's not been taken. So
that's handy. That is handy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait, sorry, I interrupted. Carry on.
No, that's all right. So we've got baubicles.co.uk you can buy it from, and prezibox.co.uk also. Really good gift company. I think that it's only on sale from about October onwards there. And yes, I'll be very thrilled if you buy one. And Etsy as well. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. And I just think they're just fantastic. And if I had known about these 10 years ago, is it 10 years ago? How long have we been married? About 10 years ago, I would have bought one. I think they're brilliant. Such a good idea. And it's such a wonderful keepsake for such a wonderful memory. So great work. Yeah, fantastic work, Paula. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you.
I had a great time chatting to Paula. She was really cool. And her baubles are fantastic. Can I say that? Can I say that without sounding like a dirty old perv? Anyway, if you know someone who's thinking about getting married, you're going to have to tell them about this because they're so cool. They're fantastic. I'll put the links on Facebook and I'll also put the link in the show notes. So if you want to check them out, the links are there. Have a gander at them. They're brilliant. So a big thank you again to Paula for being on the show. Now it's time for this. It's over there. Go over there. Go and have a look at it. Off you go. I'll wait here. You go over there.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Bob's back again, and this time he's going to be talking to us about the word boot. Here he goes.
There is a simple truth that I have learned over the years by tending bars, and that is that everybody has got to believe in something, and I believe that I'll have another drink. So this is going to be another Do You Hear What I Hear, where I reference the film Love Actually. I know. There needs to be a moratorium where I can't bring it up for a year. The way I jabber on, you would think that everything I know about English culture I learned from this 20-year-old movie. Well, that's probably true, as I'm sure Liz Truss is right now dancing around 10 Downing Street to the Pointer Sisters. Today, though, I want to refer back to this scene where Colin Frizzell is with the girls in Wisconsin. They are asking him to pronounce different words. Say bottle, straw, table, with his English accent. The reason I bring this up is today's word is one that you've already heard before on this podcast. However, most American listeners were already familiar with it. This word is frequently used as an example of something that the English and the Americans will call by different names. It is almost like the game being played by Colin and the girls. But instead of, how do you say this, you point to different things and say, what do you call this? One common example is what the British call a boot on a car, which is what we call a trunk in the States. We Americans laugh and say, are they kidding? Boot? Isn't that so dumb? And this is today's word, boot. Jack mentioned it when he bought the Christmas quiz game at the local car boot sale. But I am not going to compare the English use of the word boot to how Americans use boot. But instead, I want to look at why we call it boot and trunk. The funny thing is the reason we use these terms is similar. It all goes back to the original use of the word. During the time of horse-drawn carriages in England, when there were dirt roads, the box on the back of the carriage would carry the muddy boots. It was called the boot box, or the boot locker, which later became just boot, and the name stuck, even when carriages became cars and the muddy roads got paved. So okay, that makes sense, but then why do Americans call it a trunk? The use of the word trunk comes from the time when those large traveling chests, you know, trunks like Mr. Gower gave to George Bailey, they were often strapped to the back of the car. But once the automakers started designing cars with built-in storage compartments, there was no longer any reason to travel with trunks strapped to the back of the car, but the name still stuck. So for all of our self-assured American smugness, the terms we both use come from the same place, and both don't make any sense at all. It's kind of like football and soccer, but that's for another podcast. Cheers and happy Christmas.
He's putting some research in now, isn't he, kids? Yeah, he's actually doing some proper graft. Very impressive there, Bob. Yes, we've all learned something today. Well done. Thank you so much for that one. Now it's time for this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Speaking of boots and car boot sales, yes, it's time for the Christmas quiz. Do you know what? I've only got enough questions for this episode and the next episode. Don't know what I'm going to do after that. But I go to the car boot sale most weekends, and that's where I buy all my best clothes. And yeah, the car boot sale is going to finish soon because it ends at the end of October. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've had a look around for Christmas quizzes. I'll have to go on blooming eBay and spend proper money. At a car boot sale, I'll be paying like a quid. eBay, the postage alone is going to be a couple of quid, if not £3.50. Let's not get into that. I'll sort something out. Don't panic. Right. You know the deal. I ask you 10 questions, then I hum 5 songs. Then I give you 10 answers, and then another 5 answers, and then you sit there totting up your scores. Actually, while I'm here, I just want to say, remember last episode, Todd scored 9? Well, Benji Pearson emailed me and told me he got 10 out of 15. So well done, Benji. But better than that, Adam Parker from the Merry Britsmas podcast, if you're not listening to the Merry Britsmas podcast, you should be, because it's very good. He emailed me and told me he got 12 right, and he was only 1 year out on the question about the Queen's first Christmas televised speech, and he's given himself half a point for that. So that's 12 and a half points. Did anyone get more than 12 and a half points? I doubt it. Anyway, congratulations to those two. Now it's time for this episode's quiz. Are you ready? I don't care if you're ready, I'm doing it anyway. Question number 1. What was the name of the character played by Macaulay Culkin in the film Home Alone? And also, a little clue for you. It's a little clue, okay? It might help you. He also had the same name in Home Alone 2. So that might help you. Okay, question number 2. In which TV show would you find a dog named Santa's Little Helper? Question number 3. Feliz Navidad is Happy Christmas in which language? It's an easy one, isn't it? Spanish. Oops. Question number 4. Which famous actor died on Christmas Day in 1977? Give you a clue? He's no longer alive. Okay, question number something. Which former country was dissolved over the Christmas period in 1991? Number 6. In what film did Billy Bob Thornton play a bad Santa? No, sorry. In what film did Billy Bob Thornton play a mall Santa called Willie T. Stokes? Okay, question number, you tell me. What is a baby turkey called? Do you know, I feel like I've asked that question before. Maybe I have. That helps you, doesn't it? If you were paying attention when I asked it before. Okay, question number something. Which country was tinsel invented? Is that right? Which country was tinsel invented? In which country was tinsel invented, I'm saying. They missed out the in. Question number whatever. In which town was baby Jesus born? I'll give you a clue. It was a little town. Oh, little town. Question. Oh, last one. So this must be number 10. In which country was the real St. Nicholas born? Well, you'll know that if you've been listening to the last few episodes, haven't you? And also, it's very Christmassy sounding. So that's nice as well. Christmas dinner. It's giving it away, isn't it? It's turkey. Oops. Right. Right, here come the songs. You ready? Okay, this first one, right, I've never even heard it. I've never heard it before. So I'm actually listening to it with my earbud in my ear, and I'm going to hum along to it. I've listened to it a lot of times over. I hope I don't naff it up too much. I honestly had never heard this song before. It came out in 2013. I'm going to give it my best shot. Are you ready? I don't care if you're ready. I'm not ready. It's happening anyway. Mm-hmm. All right, that's it. I don't know what you made of that. I don't know what I made of it. But that was it, all right? Good luck with that one. Okay, this one is a bit better, but I'm still going to have trouble humming it. I know the song. I don't know it well. I'll give it my best shot. Here it comes. I'm not happy about that, alright? I'm not happy about it at all, but I did it, okay? I'll tell you what though, next one's a bit easier. Here it comes. That's all you're getting? That's all you need? This one is an easy one if you're in the UK. That's all you're getting. Again, if you're in the UK, that's all you need. And the last one, here it comes. I've forgotten what happens after that, but I'm sure you got it. And if you didn't get it, I don't care. So, here come your 10 answers. Are you ready? Again, I do not care because the answers are coming. Question number 1. What was the name of the character played by Macaulay Culkin in the film Home Alone? His name was Kevin McAllister. We all knew that. Question number 2 is an interesting one because in which TV show would you find a dog named Santa's Little Helper? Well, that's The Simpsons, right? That was the first ever episode, was when they got Santa's Little Helper. I don't know if you remember, that was Simpsons roasting on an open fire. I'm not going to go into it, but there you go. Feliz Navidad is Happy Christmas in which language? A Spanish. And question number 4, which famous actor died on Christmas Day in 1977? That was Charlie Chaplin. Which country was dissolved over the Christmas period in 1991? That was the Soviet Union. In which film did Billy Bob Thornton play a bad Santa called Willie T. Soakes? That was Bad Santa. Okay, the next one. What is a baby turkey called? Well, this baby turkey was called Paul. Lovely little chap. Running around. Yeah, he's red. Oh, no, sorry, I read that wrong. Poult. Not Paul. Poult. P-O-U-L-T. Poult. His name could be Paul, though. It could be Paul the Poult. Let's go with that. Paul the Poult. If you got Paul the Poult, you get a point. If you just put Paul, you're getting nothing. Let's just do the next question. In which country was tinsel invented? That was Germany. I don't know if I knew that. And number 9, in which town was baby Jesus born? That was a little town called Bethlehem. And the last question, in which country was the real St. Nicholas born? Well, we all know that was Turkey. He was born in a turkey. There we go. That was your 10 questions. Now let's see how you get on with these 5 songs that I made a right hash job of. Okay. A first one that I'd never even heard before. It's quite a nice song. It was Snow in California by Ariana Grande. So, yeah. Do you know, I actually liked it. I thought it was all right, you know. It took me a while to sort of get the tune in my head. But, yeah, it's, you know, something, wasn't it? The second one was What Christmas Means to Me by Stevie Wonder. Third one was, of course, Last Christmas. Fourth one, tricky if you're overseas, easy if you're in the UK. It was Mistletoe and Wine. And question number 5 was, I saw Mummy kissing Santa Claus. So there you go. Those were your 15 answers. I don't care how you did. I love you just the same if you got none right, you know. But I'd like to think you did okay. For your own sake. Now it's time for this. I've got another story for you, boys and girls. And this is an absolutely delightful one that was sent in by John McAllister. So I'm going to read it out as he's written it. As a kid, I would go to a Christmas party at a Masonic lodge that my dad and granddad were members of. It was your usual 90s kids' Christmas party. People would bring trays of sandwiches, biscuits, some home bacon and soft drinks laced with sugar and E-numbers, as was normal at the time. The party was run by 2 guys. One had a keyboard and the other played accordion. They played the classics, Jingle Bells, 12 Days of Christmas, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and occasionally they'd give out updates on where Santa was and how long he would be, while we played musical statues, pass the parcel and musical chairs, with the winner getting a box of sweets. When it came to the main event, all the kids would sit on the floor making an aisle for the big man to walk up. The role of Santa was played by a guy who was naturally built like Father Christmas, my granddad's best friend, Jimmy Beaton. We're not related, but I grew up calling him Uncle Beaton. He would come in with a sack of toys over one shoulder and ringing a bell while we sang Jingle Bells as loud as we could. Each kid would be called up and given a gift. Now the gift is the reason I'm telling you this story. The gifts were all very much the same. One type for the boys and one type for the girls. One year it was a football set for the boys. You got a football, goalie gloves and shin pads. It's a great gift for a kid that likes football, but I was not one of those kids. The next year was the same. I can remember sitting there and seeing other boys go up and get the same sized box as last year and feeling very sad. When it was my turn, I went up, got my gift and brought it back to where my mum and gran were sitting and sat with my gift on the table, unopened. My mum asked if I was going to open it and I said, what's the point? I know it's a football set again. I did use the football set, but I was just not as excited about it as others might have been. The year after that, the gifts changed. They were more personalised, there was a wider selection and they weren't all the same. Lots more thought had gone into the presents that year and I received a star map projector, something that I'd seen and wanted. And the following years was the same, all the gifts were different and not a football set to be seen. Now fast forward a good few years after I'd lived in Southampton and travelled the world, and my now wife and I were living at my parents, and my mum said that she had to go out and get the gifts for the party. I asked her when she had taken over running the party and getting the gifts, and she said it was ever since I got the second football set. My mum is now retired from organising the party, as has Jimmy Beaton from being Santa, but not until my 2 kids, nieces and nephews, had been to the party and had gifts from the same Santa that gave me gifts. Isn't that what Christmas is all about, boys and girls? What a fabulous story. What a wonderful tradition carried on for the next generation. And what a wonderful job his mum did, seeing his disappointment, going out and taking control of the situation. Fantastic story. Thank you so much for that one, John. This episode's recommendation is a podcast called the Happy Halloween Podcast. Now, if you listen to the show regularly, you might remember that a year ago, when it was coming up to Halloween, I recommended a podcast called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligula, and that was presented by a friend of the show, Tony Dixon. Well, he's decided to reboot his podcast, he's started again, and he's changed the name, and now it's called The Happy Halloween Podcast. And it's great. I listen to all the episodes that he's released. I listen to them all today, and I've really enjoyed them. It's the ideal time of year to be listening to them. When this comes out, Halloween is only 1 week away, so it's the ideal time for you to binge listen, like I did, to all his episodes. He's got some great stuff on there, some interviews, like the history stuff. There's loads of stuff. I highly recommend it. The Happy Halloween Podcast with Tony Dixon. I will put links in the show notes, and I'll also put a link on Facebook. But if you want to go and check it out now, the website address is anchor.fm/Happy Halloween Pod. And that's all one word, Happy Halloween Pod. The episodes are only short, most of them. They're like about 20 minutes long. And yeah, I highly recommend it. It's the ideal thing to be listening to at this time of year. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a huge thank you to Susan Brasher-Tisher for her wonderful story. Also to John McAllister for his lovely story. Of course, I've got to say thank you to Paula Horwood for her interview and talking to us about her lovely baubles. And Bob Baker, thanks so much again for your input. We really appreciate it. If you want to get involved and you want to be part of the show, or if you just want to get in touch, drop me an email. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, which I haven't updated in about 2 years, maybe. Be a bit less than that. But, you know, you can go on there, read what's on there, and maybe use the contact form if you want to get in touch. Do it that way. Do what you want. It's your life. But I'd love to hear from you. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Happy Halloween and Merry Christmas.
What are you doing out here?
I'm pitching a no-hitter for the Yankees. What's it look like?
But it's Christmas Eve. Don't you know what that means?
Yeah, it means you're out of a job till next year, you and the rest of the winos.
Don't you know who I am?
Sure, you're a nut.
I'm Santa Claus.
Right, and I'm the Tooth Fairy.